In the world of A Fire in the Flesh, fate and free will dance a dangerous tango. We meet Serafina and Nyctos, Ash, in dire circumstances, captured by Kolis, the false king of gods, after a shocking betrayal. Their imprisonment sets the stage for an exploration of destiny versus choice that resonates deeply with our own struggles. Serafina's entire existence has been defined by prophecy. She was created to kill Polis, the false primal of life. Yet, as she wrestles with this predetermined path, she begins questioning her agency. "I have choices, even when it feels like I don't," she realizes in a moment that changes everything. This revelation becomes her turning point. Even Holland, revealed to be one of the Fates, reminds her, "Every day, there is a choice to keep going, to face the future head-on, or not." This central theme, that even when larger forces control our destiny, our responses remain our own, speaks to anyone who's felt trapped by circumstances beyond their control. What makes this struggle so compelling is how it extends beyond philosophical musing into concrete action. When Serafina decides to use Kolis's obsession with Satoria to her advantage, she's exercising agency within limited options, a powerful metaphor for how we all must sometimes work within constraints rather than futilely fighting against them. Kolis's realm serves as a chilling metaphor for authoritarian regimes. His rule depends on fear, manipulation, and information control, tactics uncomfortably familiar in our world. Callum reveals, "He was better than that before Ethos died," suggesting Kolis's tyranny stems from grief and betrayal rather than inherent evil. Most disturbing is his treatment of the Chosen, mortals raised to serve in Elysium without agency. When Kolis forces Jove to undergo ascension, we witness their complete indoctrination. "It is an honor," Jove says, though his trembling betrays fear. This system mirrors historical instances where ruling classes convinced the oppressed their subjugation was natural. When Serafina intervenes after seeing a god assault a Chosen, she confronts not just individual cruelty, but systemic exploitation. Kolis's public punishment of Evander demonstrates the consequences of defiance. By manipulating Serafina into killing Evander, then revealing she was misled, he shows absolute control, making even opponents complicit in his cruelty. Trauma profoundly shapes the characters, especially Serafina, who was trained as a weapon, emotionally abused by her mother, and sexually assaulted by Tavius. Her reflection that bathtubs, once a luxury, are now tainted by her near-death experience demonstrates how trauma transforms ordinary experiences. The novel explores various survival mechanisms. Serafina's ability to become a blank canvas, emptying herself of emotion to endure difficult situations, represents a dissociative response common among trauma survivors. Ash copes differently, removing his cardia to protect himself from emotional pain after losing his mother, building walls of sarcasm and detachment rather than becoming blank. The portrayal acknowledges that healing isn't linear. When Ash helps Serafina feel comfortable bathing again by standing guard, it's a small but significant step. Yet other traumas remain unresolved, reflecting the reality that recovery is ongoing work rather than a destination. The novel explores existence's fundamental duality, opposing forces that both contrast and depend on each other. This concept manifests through Serafina and Ash, who personify life and death. "There must always be death and vice versa," Kolis explains. This balance isn't merely metaphorical, but literal. Without both primals, the realms would collapse. This interdependence reflects philosophical traditions where apparent opposites form complementary aspects of a greater whole. This duality extends beyond life and death. Light and shadow, creation and destruction, love and hate are interconnected forces defining each other. When Ash tells Serafina, "I never felt alive until you," death acknowledges finding meaning through life. These dualities exist within individuals, too. Serafina carries life's embers alongside destruction's potential. Ash, though death incarnate, nurtures and protects. Even Colas, ostensibly life's primal, primarily brings death. The novel ultimately examines love's duality, how the same emotion bringing greatest joy causes deepest pain, offering a meditation where light and shadow coexist in every character. Armin Trout offers a mature exploration of genuine love in a genre often criticized for romanticizing toxic relationships. The novel clearly distinguishes between healthy love and dangerous obsession through contrasting dynamics. Serafina explains to Colas, loving someone isn't less than being in love. It's just not as strong or as irrevocable. Being in love is, it's unbreakable. This distinction has consequences. Colas claims to love Satoria, yet his love manifests as possession and entitlement. When he tells Serafina, "I killed my brother to bring you back to life," he presents this as proof of love, blind to its selfishness. In contrast, Ash's love respects Serafina's autonomy, even when disagreeing with her choices. His love expresses itself through support, protection, and vulnerability. The novel suggests true love isn't about grand gestures, but consistent ways we show up for each other, like Ash standing guard while Serafina bathes, or asking for consent, demonstrating love through actions that honor her boundaries. Who are we beyond identities others assign to us? This question drives Serafina's journey. When Ates reveals she isn't the weapon she was raised to be, her identity shatters, forcing her to determine who she truly is through choices reflecting her own values rather than others' expectations. Ash faces similar struggles. Is he defined by his role as primal of death, his relationship to Colas, or his missing Cardia? When he declares, "The lives of millions of mortals, nor those of the gods, do not surpass yours," he's asserting his right to self-definition through personal choice. The novel shows identities forming through relationships. Serafina begins seeing herself through Ash's eyes, not as a weapon, but as someone worthy of love, reflecting how our self-perceptions are influenced by those who truly know us. Ultimately, identities evolve through choices. When Serafina fights for Ash despite personal risk, she defines herself as someone who values love over self-preservation. These accumulating choices form a self that transcends assigned roles. The novel concludes with a powerful message about finding hope in the darkest circumstances. Characters facing imprisonment, betrayal, and impending death somehow find reasons to continue fighting and loving. This theme manifests physically in the Shadowlands' transformation from perpetual twilight to a realm where patches of grass sprouting where there was once only barren earth, mirroring characters who discover new beginnings where they expected endings. Serafina's journey exemplifies this theme. Raised believing her death was inevitable, she's unexpectedly reborn as the primal of life. When the rot stops, both in the Shadowlands and the mortal realm, it confirms healing is possible even after centuries of damage. Hope requires community. Serafina's rebirth depends on Ash's love, Atessa's knowledge, and others' loyalty, challenging individualistic heroism by showing we navigate darkness together. The love between Ash and Serafina, defying even the removal of his Cardia, becomes the novel's most powerful symbol of hope emerging from unlikely places.